Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM. After 26 years serving Middle Tennessee as the congressman from the 6th Congressional District and the chairman of the House Committee on Science and Technology, Bart Gordon stepped down and decided not to run for a re-election as congressman, but he is going to be celebrated for his performance in supporting education at the City Schools Foundation's Excellence in Education Celebration Friday, March the 11th at the Stones River Country Club here in Murfreesboro. And to talk with us now is former Congressman Bart Gordon via telephone from Washington, D.C. Thanks for being with us today, Bart.
Sure, Jenna. I'm glad to be back on WMOT.
Hey, what was your reaction when you found out that the City Schools Foundation was presenting you with this honor?
Well, you know, Murfreesboro is my home, and so you're always, you know, gratified to have recognition in your own hometown.
You went to high school here. Your mother was a school teacher. Can you tell us, take us back a little bit before we get into your record on education, especially in science and technology fields, and talk a little bit about the influence of your mother in your appreciation of education?
Well, my father also taught school for a while. I started off at Hobgood, then went on to Central, and then to MTSU. And I think that, you know, particularly with my mother, seeing her grade papers at night and the way she cared about the kids. At the time she was teaching, she taught at a school that where there were a lot of low-income students, and sometimes she would bring their their clothes home and wash them, and so that when they would come to school, they would have clean clothes there. I mean, she really cared about her students, and that was, you know, was an extended family, and I think, you know, that certainly was, you know, the start of a great appreciation for me for my teachers, and again, as I went through, I think all my teachers really, you know, saw me as someone who they wanted to help reach their full potential, and it was because of my parents and those teachers that I was able to accomplish the things that I have been able to.
When your mother came home from work, would she talk about some of the biggest challenges she faced in the classroom or brag on some of her best students who really went the extra mile and achieved more than she thought they would?
You know, it was really less the progress or the accomplishments than it was, you know, stories of how someone said something, you know, or did something that was nice or caught our attention, or it was really just, it was that personal nature of it that she just, you know, they were her family, her extended family, and you could see that that's what, it was just the love and affection that really came out more than they progressed a week today.
Who are some of the most influential K-12 teachers that you can remember in your own experience?
Well, Mrs. Bowden, my, you know, MTSU's own Mrs. Bowden, who was also a neighbor of mine. She was my second grade teacher. And she had a, you know, I think an early major impact on me.
In what way?
Well, once again, I think it was a, her caring for me helped me to get a love of learning. And the way she would read to us and she was just, a great encouragement.
It's something about the best teachers that they realize the child has to be happy and comfortable and feel secure in the classroom in order to have a chance to learn and to succeed, don't you think?
Right, and they don't disown you once you graduate. I mean, whenever Ms. Bowden would see me, she would want to know how I was doing. And so, you know, a part of it is, I think, you know, I never wanted to embarrass my parents. And with teachers, because they, again, I could see how they cared about me, I never wanted to let them down. And so it was their encouragement, I think, that made me want to do my best for them.
Has kids' attitudes toward teachers changed since you were a kid, do you think?
Well, it's much tougher to be a teacher now. I mean, with the disciplinary problems, you know, I mean, I lived in the Leave It to Beaver world. You know, both my parents worked, but most families only only had, you know, were had two family parents, and the mother normally stayed at home. And we all knew that if we've got a, you know, whipping at school, we're going to get another one when we got home. It was just a different kind of environment where there was much more parental attention, and I think, you know, and you would have a full house at a parent-teacher meeting where that's not the case now. So there really weren't that many kind of disciplinary problems. And I think now, you know, unfortunately, teachers have to deal with a lot of that and problems that are brought from home.
You're known for gravitating towards science and technology issues as a congressman. Were you a good science student when you were in school?
Well, I was, I think, above adequate. I remember when I was taking chemistry as a junior, one of my, used to have what they called an unknown. You would have a little a beaker of liquid, and you had to figure out what was in there, and you do different tests. And so early on when I was using the Bunsen burner, it flared and it burned off my eyelashes. So that might tell you about the type of science student I was.
I'm sure you got the hang of the Bunsen burner after a while.
Yeah.
The 2007 America Competes Act was a major project that you got behind to help allocate more federal funding for science, technology, engineering, and math programs and research and development. Tell us what that measure has helped to accomplish in helping to keep America competitive.
Well, I think it's landmark legislation. It was back in 2005, and Lamar Alexander and I asked the National Academies to do a report on competitiveness in America in the 21st century. And their report came, and what we need to be more competitive. Their report came back and said, really, we were on a very bad track, and that when you looked around the world, there were 7 billion people. Half of those that are working make less than $2 a day. And so clearly we don't want to have to compete on wages if we're going, you know, or our standard of living is going to dramatically go down. And so that means that we have to invest in research, which then results in innovation and good jobs. But it doesn't help us to have these good jobs if we don't have a workforce that can work at that high skill level. So in other words, we've got to be making 50 widgets for every one widget they're making in China or India or somewhere else. If we're going to maintain our standard of living. And so, you know, the STEM education, or what they call, you know, science, math, and engineering, is not just for PhDs. Whether you're a high school graduate or junior college graduate or a college graduate, you really need to have those basics to be able to function at a high level really in the U.S. and in the world. And so what we tried to do was to create really doubled the funding over a 7-year period for the National Science Foundation, the Office of Science within the Department of Energy, and NIST. We created some additional, let me tell you about, energy was also their recommendation. This was before the oil shock, that we had to become more energy independent. You know, right now we are sending $400 billion a year to China to finance our spending for petroleum, which we're buying predominantly from the Mideast, which many of them are trying to kill us. And so, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. If we become more energy independent, we become more really our national security increases and our national deficit goes down. So it's very important that we also have particular research in the energy field. And we set up a program there modeled after DARPA, which is the Defense Department, High Risk, High Reward Agency. That's where the Internet was developed, GPS, stealth technology, those sort of things, for a really not just an incremental improvement, but really some transformational increases in energy, whether it's battery storage, whether it is a new type of liquid fuel. You know, we want to make these big, big jumps. So that was important. But again, you have to have the workforce. And so they told us then, and it's even worse now, American students, the longer they're in school, the worse they do in math and science in terms of their peers around the world. Of the something like 35 major countries, we come in 31st or 32nd in terms of math and science scores. And what they found is that at that time, 59% of the math teachers, middle school math teachers or above, had neither a certification to teach math or a degree, and almost 90% of the physical science teachers. So it's hard, no matter how good a teacher might be, to teach a subject that they don't have a, you know, a good background in. So we set up programs so that those teachers can come back to school in the summer and get their certification, and also scholarships for students that want to go into math or science and education and agree to teach for 5 years. So, you know, I think you're going to see, and I guess the other program was taking individuals out of the military or other out of other professions that might have a math or science background and fast-tracking them into the teaching profession. Was reauthorized on a bipartisan basis. And that's one of the things I'm very pleased about. In the 4 years that I was chairman, we passed 151 bills and resolutions, and 100% of those were bipartisan, just as the American Pizza Act was. And Lamar Alexander helped make that true over in the Senate.
So it was never a concern of yours that with the conservative Republicans crying for austerity that they would let it die or let it sunset?
Well, I think, you know, they recognize, just as the business community and even conservative columnist George Will and many others recognize, that we have to get our deficit down, but we have to do it not just by mindless across-the-board cuts, but by trying to establish priorities. And certainly education and research are going to have to be priorities if we're going to be able to have the exports and the type of standard of living and the type of economy that we need here. You know, the best way to balance the budget is to have a robust economy. And that's, you know, like new inventions, like the Internet, like Google, those sorts of things. All, you know, much of that came out of federal research.
Now, you are also a proponent of nanotechnology, and you sponsored legislation when you were in the Congress that would call for a research program to focus on environmental and safety aspects of nanotechnology. Tell us exactly what nanotechnology is and what its practical applications are.
Well, nanotechnology, you can define it different ways, but in essence, it's when you are manipulating molecules that create a little different substance. For example, you can make a much stronger and lighter weight material for building airplanes or cars. It's used in sunscreen right now. So nanotechnology has an enormous potential in the future. And if we're going to maintain our really international status in manufacturing and high-tech in every way, then we have to lead in nanotechnology. And when the first thing that I discovered was there were, I think there were something like 15 different agencies that either provided funds for nanotechnology research or some type of regulation, and which wasn't a very efficient way to go about it. So we set up a coordinating body or umbrella group that would bring all those together and coordinate them. And then we also set up within that an industry advisory group to tell us, you know, what are the type of breakthroughs you're going to need so that we can lead the world, and what are the type of skills that the workforce will need to work in these new kind of products, so that we could try to follow up in that way. And one of the things that everyone said is we've got to be, you know, certain about the health and safety standards. You might remember a few years ago when Monsanto came up with what they call a genetically genetically modified organism, you know, anyway, a new type of grain that people were very concerned about, that they didn't know whether it was safe. And so we need to have, I think, very transparent research early on to look at nanotechnology and see if there are a part of the production process or the use process that could be dangerous in some way for health or environment. If it is, then that needs to be changed. And that way it will give really the public more confidence that these products are going to be healthy and safe, and that way they can be more universally used.
To the extent that people, the general public, associates the word science with Tennessee, the first thing that probably comes to mind is Oak Ridge, which grew out of the Manhattan Project. Is there any reason in your mind why Tennessee couldn't eventually someday have its own Silicon Valley or Research Triangle Park?
Well, you know, that is something that I talked to the Murfreesboro Chamber of Commerce about a few years ago. Andrea Lowry really took up the banner, and we wanted to set up a high-tech corridor, really from Nashville to Oak Ridge, taking Vanderbilt, MTSU, Tennessee Tech, rather AEDC, and then on up to Oak Ridge and down on to Chattanooga and Huntsville, to really have a high-tech corridor working together, spinning products out of whether the universities or the labs, that then can create new industries and jobs. And Andrea Lowry took a very, you know, she took the lead in that and was a great champion there, and we created something we called Minds to Market. And so we're trying to do that now. I think there's some real areas of potential. Solar energy and storage is one of those. You know, Nissan is making a $1 billion investment at Smyrna in building batteries there. There's a $1 billion investment being made up in Clarksville to make silicon for solar panels, and another $1 billion down in Bradley County. And so I think that we have the real potential that we can spin off through the solar and storage and batteries, more industries and more jobs. The reason that when Nissan came here, then Saturn came, and then Toyota up in Kentucky, and then all the little suppliers, because they wanted to be close by each other. Mm-hmm. And I think we can do that same sort of thing with the clean energy sector, which really could make Tennessee a center for that.
Getting back to the America Competes Act for just a second, when you were mentioning the fact that sometimes people who were teaching science in K-12 were not really as professionally along as they should be or needed to be in that discipline, and they needed a chance for professional development, it seems to me that's always been the case dating back to when I was in school. Why are we so desperate for good teachers in K-12 that they stick someone who isn't qualified to teach science in a science classroom? You wouldn't do that in higher ed. You wouldn't have a history teacher teaching biology or a music teacher teaching mass comm.
Well, the problem is trying to attract those students into teaching profession. They can make more money on Wall Street, or they can make more money being a doctor or doing something else. And so it's not a matter of taking a science teacher and having them teach a history course. It's just a matter that we don't have enough science and math teachers that are certified. And so that's why someone else winds up doing it oftentimes.
Some people say that we lost our edge when the space race became blasé. In other words, the age of Sputnik and the space race with the Soviet Union was what propelled the United States into science and technology overdrive, and now we're on the wane by comparison to other nations. The same thing, I suppose, you could say with the Manhattan Project during World War II. Do we need another national mobilization effort like those two examples I just mentioned in order to spark interest in science and technology education?
Well, not only that, but the resulting industries and jobs that come from that. You're right. Sputnik launched NASA. It was also the reason that the Science and Technology Committee was created. That was one of Congress's, really, two of the major things that Congress did in reaction was create our committee and also NASA. And with that, and with the investment in going to the moon, there were whole new industries developed, semiconductor, many different types of things were developed. And also people were inspired to go into these areas. Clearly, we need another so-called Sputnik moment, and I think that is alternative energy and clean energy. Again, right now, we're spending $400 billion a year to borrow money from China to buy oil from the Mideast and elsewhere. And so that doesn't make much sense. And I think that if we have this really Manhattan Project or Apollo Project in the energy field, it's going to make us more It's going to improve our national security, our economic security. It's going to create jobs. It's going to improve the environment. So I think that's the area that we need to have our next budget moment in.
As much as you care about education, and the record clearly shows that you do, you went to law school. Why didn't you become a teacher yourself?
Well, you know, for whatever reason, I'd always wanted to be a lawyer, and so that was the route that I took. But I did teach some. I taught at MTSU some courses in government, and I hope that I'll have a chance to teach again later.
We would welcome that, undoubtedly. We'd also welcome a new science building if there's just wanted to get in a plug for that, even though you're not in Congress anymore.
Well, that's very important, particularly if you see just the really unsafe conditions that we have now for our building. MTSU did all the right things, went through all the right processes, and it's been the number one item to be dealt with by the Building Commission for Education really for a few years now. And so hopefully we're going to see something done on that. But that's going to be a state building, not a federal building. And so I hope that the state will come to our aid here.
Did it ever seem to you that when you were in Congress that support for K-12 education and support for higher education seemed to be at odds with one another when, in fact, they should complement each other?
Well, I mean, that's been an ongoing discussion for a long time in Tennessee. I think Governor Bradison tried to really bring those together, and I think you're going to see more of that now. Like, for example, I noticed the other day where when you go to a junior college, then you if you're planning on going to a 4-year after that, that they help line up those courses, and so they're much more efficient. So I think we do have to look for ways to bring efficiencies to the system from, pre-K all the way through postgraduate.
With the state of the economy as it is right now, experts say that there is a slow-moving recovery on the way, but it has yet to be felt, according to most polls, by the average person. Do you fear that budget cuts at the local, state, and federal levels could result in setbacks for progress in education, particularly science and technology education?
Well, there's going to have to be some reductions in our spending. We simply can't continue the way we are. But once again, we have to do it, I think, in a smart way. And some of that can be bringing through efficiencies. But there are some programs that will have to be cut, and others where you have to spend more. I mean, we need to make those investments. So as we go through this sort of rearranging process, we need to do it in a smart way.
Just on the lighter side, what is it like to be Bart and Leslie Gordon's child, knowing that Mommy and Daddy are not going to settle for anything less than her absolute best efforts when she goes to school?
Well, it hadn't bothered her much so far. we're very proud of her, and quite frankly, she just blows it out in all her geography and those sort of things, but she didn't do too good in math the other day on a test, and actually she cried about it. I mean, we didn't, and it wasn't because we were pressing her.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that she, wanted to do well, and I'm glad that she wants to do well, and that's what we want to instill in her is, to do her best, and I think her teachers are trying, and after that, she wanted to do, there's some little extra work you can do, and she wasn't doing that. And so she wants to do the extra credit work now to try to catch up.
Isn't that terrific to have not only such a bright child, but also a child who is so self-motivated and a child for whom education is so important that she would care about it to that extent?
Well, she's just 9. We've got our fingers crossed. There's a long way to go.
Were you that self-motivated when you were a kid? Were you one of those people who liked school and actually didn't just like, being with your friends and hanging out and stuff and recess and lunch, but actually loved learning and got a high off of learning something new?
Well, that's a little strong, but I enjoyed school, and I liked to sit in the front row, and it wasn't all fun. But but it was, you know, I mean, history to me was a big story, and I loved the story, and of course you like, you know, you like the people there, and again, I had teachers that cared about me, and I had a very good experience through school, and I'm, you know, you're just happy about it, and that's part of the reason that I want to try to be able to give a little bit back here and try to help our school system to be even better.
Teaching is a profession that you can't just go in and do by rote. Don't you find it to be the case that you cannot possibly be a good K through 12 teacher and hang in there and do right by the students without having a passion for it that began before you even went to college to try to, you know, get your teaching certificate?
Well, I think so, because it's just too tough. If you don't have a passion, it's just too tough to stick in there and do. And I would say, you know, a large percentage of all of our teachers were inspired by their teachers. And so, you just keep that process going.
This event at which you are going to be honored is a fundraiser for the City Schools Foundation. There's a bumper sticker that says, "I wonder when they're going to have to hold a bake sale to raise money for the defense." And it's true that you have bake sales and garage sales and kids out there selling paperback books and candy and donuts and all kinds of things to raise money for school books and extracurricular activities. And what other kind of endeavor do you have such initiative just in order to get the essentials that you need to carry it out?
Well, you know, I guess I would have two thoughts there. The first is it's unfortunate that that is the case, that we're not providing all kids with the tools that they need, because by helping, you know, our kids to maximize their ability, is just going to create a more robust economy, and it's going to pay dividends. But the other sort of thought that comes to mind is that our communities do know it's that important, that they are willing to have the bake sales, they are willing to have these types of dinners to be able to help the kids. And, you know, I would say that most of the people that will be participating will not have children in school right now. But they know how important it is to their community and to the health of their community.
Bart Gordon is going to receive an award from the City Schools Foundation at its Excellence in Education celebration on Friday, March the 11th at the Stones River Country Club. If you want to find out more about the event, contact Collier Andres Smith at 615-828-7063, and her email address is S. Collier A. That's S-C-O-L-L-I-E-R-A at AOL.com. Bart Gordon, thanks for being our guest today on MTSU On the Record. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Jen. I've always been a big fan of WMOT, and so I'm glad I could join you again today.
It's great to have you on our air.
Bye.
Bye. This is MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com, and we're available on iTunes.